Hey, everyone. I'm your host, Kevin Kelly, and welcome back to Macro Matters, a research-driven podcast examining the key trends impacting both the traditional and digital asset markets. My goal is simple, to bring you behind the scenes with some of today's top investing minds as we explore novel ideas and controversial topic areas to make sense of today's investing environment. If you're not on Delphi's research portal, you're missing out on the critical analysis read by the top minds in the crypto and digital asset space, so be sure to check it out. One quick housekeeping item. Nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. I may personally hold securities or tokens mentioned on this podcast, and you can view our show notes below for our complete disclosures. And with that, let's jump into the episode. My guest today is Sunina Dheja, Head of Digital Assets and DLT at TD Ameritrade. In this conversation, Sunina and I discuss consensus among traditional investors and sentiment towards Bitcoin and digital assets, the growing demand among RIAs to understand Bitcoin and its potential role in a multi-asset portfolio context, the rise of DeFi and digital assets as a kind of Mayday event, and the importance of explaining the how-to when it comes to education as crypto starts to seep into mainstream conversation. I thoroughly enjoyed this discussion, and I hope you do as well. Another episode of Macro Matters starts right now. All right, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. I am really excited to have Sunina on right now. Sunina, how are you doing?
I am doing really good. Kevin, I have to say, I'm a little giddy to be on your pod because as an avid listener, I have been a diligent listener of your podcast content, but also all the wonderful research that you and the Delphi team put out. So delighted to actually be here with you and to contribute for a change.
Really appreciate that. No, we'll get into to all that good stuff here pretty shortly. And you yourself, I mean, you know, you're the head of digital assets for TD Ameritrade. You know, obviously TD being one of the largest, most well-known brokerages in the U.S. You know, we think about your involvement there. TD is really kind of the epitome, I guess you could say, of a Wall Street incumbent embracing both blockchain, Bitcoin, really getting immersed in this entire digital asset ecosystem. So I want to start with, you know, at a high level, you know, what is TD's kind of general stance on digital assets and why are you guys putting so much time and energy and effort into, you know, this nascent market?
Yeah, you know, it's 2020 and it's still kind of mind-boggling that there are remnants to that narrative of we love blockchain, but not Bitcoin, which I never understood and I still don't understand. From a TD Ameritrade vantage point, you know, we've always believed that it's imperative for incumbents like us to lean in and explore and engage with the merits of the underlying technology, which is blockchain, but also the emerging asset class, which is Bitcoin, right? And honestly, you know, a lot of our thesis was predicated on this ethos that this is really a continuity of what we've been doing for over 40 years, right? So if you think about a firm like TD Ameritrade, whose genesis can be traced back to Mayday, which was the first big transformation of Wall Street and this notion of democratizing finance, you know, that's really what we've been doing, bringing Wall Street to Main Street. And with the emergence of this asset class, we really saw leaning into this ecosystem as a logical continuity. Some other factors that really informed our decision is, number one, you know, think about the linear growth and adoption of any new technology, right? It's fascinating that this kind of trend repeats itself over and over again, where the delta between novelty and necessity closes rapidly, right? And what I mean by that is something that can seem very nice to have, but can very quickly become need to have. Let's use a everyday scenario with COVID that people can relate to, right? I remember before COVID, a lot of my colleagues loved to mock me for being a lover of Instacart, right? Oh, you're a spoiled city millennial. You can't do anything for yourself. You got to delegate it, right? I love Instacart. I can't live without it because I hate grocery shopping. And if I went grocery shopping, I would only buy myself ice cream, which is not a good idea, right? But when COVID hit, suddenly all of those same colleagues were kind of reaching out to me, wait, what was that app again, right? So this delta between the adoption of something that seemed nice to have very quickly become need to have. And we saw that even in financial services. I remember a few years ago when I joined TD Ameritrade to lead digital transformation, we were still having this debate about how do we divide up our tech budget between development for our web-based platform versus mobile, right? Today, that just seems unfathomable, right? When mobile devices or smartphones start coming out, no, you know, it was for playing Candy Crush and showing off to your friends what a fancy device you had. Nobody thought that we would be living our lives on a smartphone, let alone banking and now trading, right? And that delta closed very quickly. And it is our fundamental belief that we will see, and we are already seeing that with digital assets, you know, to paraphrase Hemingway, who said it very beautifully, you know, slowly at first, then all at once. So, you know, that, you know, so kind of really leaning into it. The second is really around, you know, focusing on the problems that we can solve. So one of the things we really start with baseline is, what is the problem? Why is it worth solving? And why are we uniquely qualified to? You know, while capital markets and financial services have come a long way, there's still a lot of complexity and opacity and inefficiencies within the system. And blockchain presents a wonderful opportunity for us to further break down those barriers. And with things like tokenization, we can also bring online new markets and new asset classes and create, you know, opportunities for a new wave of market participants that didn't exist before. And then the last point I'll just make is kind of tying back to what I said at the opening. For us, we really believe it's in our DNA. You know, we've been on this journey of bringing Wall Street to Main Street, creating a level playing field for Main Street investors. And we believe that with the rise of this asset class, everybody ought to have access to it and make the best decision that's right for them. So a lot of our strategy and approach is really predicated on the voice of the customer, and also really looking at this technology and this asset class, you know, from the client's eyes and asking ourselves, how can we, you know, invest in it, build for it, and, you know, create on-ramps that will deliver meaningful value to our clients. And to clarify, the clients that we myopically obsess about are the individual investors and the RIA community. So, you know, so those three things and the confluence of them coming together has really kind of been the tailwind kind of guiding our approach.
I love that. And there's so much to unpack there. And one of the things that you hit on that I made a note that I wanted to bring up, and it's a perfect segue to, we'll just kind of jump, you know, feet first right into it, is you mentioned this idea of you know, kind of the next May Day event, right? And you and I have talked about this offline before, but about the concept of the rise of, you know, digital assets and DeFi really leading to that next May Day event. I think it'd be really helpful for a lot of people if you could, one, first kind of clarify what you mean by that, but also what the potential impact of that will have, because I agree wholeheartedly with a number of things you just said, and I think we can kind of unpack them centered around, or at least initially starting with this idea of, you know, what the next May Day event would look like.
Yeah, you know, I'll start with another memorable quote from one of our favorite writers, Matt Levine, who writes the daily blog, or used to. I think he's on sabbatical right now. But he once quipped in his own witty way that Bitcoiners are simply relearning the lessons of financial history, but at a much more accelerated pace. And there's so much truth in it. And, you know, and something that, you know, I love going back and kind of reading history. And, you know, there's this quote about, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. It's just a different iteration. And you know, for us, May Day is kind of that anchor event. And again, for the benefit of your audience, what I mean when I refer to May Day, and this is the good May Day. As a pilot, we use the call sign May Day, but that's the negative May Day. This is the positive May Day. you know, so people don't realize that prior to May 1st, 1975, for Main Street consumers like you and I and your audience to invest in the stock market was a Herculean task. You know, investing in capital markets or buying a stock of a company XYZ was really reserved for very few people with the right access and an enormous amount of capital. So it was a pretty high barrier for entry. And then there was a rule change that occurred, and it went into effect on May 1st, 1975, hence it's called May Day, that really enabled, market-based pricing, but also the creation of a whole category that we've come to know as the brokerage industry. And that really, for the first time, started this transformation of everyday Americans starting to take charge of their financial freedom and the ability for them to engage with capital markets with the same best-in-class platforms, access to information, technology, and products that before was reserved for a very few on quote-unquote Wall Street, right? So that was the big transforming event. And when I look at digital assets as a whole, and specifically what's happening in DeFi, which is just astounding in terms of the proliferation of that technology and the diversity of those use cases, to me, I feel very bullish because it's reminiscent of perhaps the second wave of the May Day that will continue to, level the playing field, further democratize financial services by creating this big tent that can bring in more and more and a diverse type of market participants that perhaps have been left behind. So it's that continuity. So that's what excites me about this ecosystem, but also connects it back to the history of where it all began. And it's fascinating, if you read the history of May Day, the catalyzing event, but also the creation of brokerage firms like TD Ameritrade and others, some of the shade that the incumbents of that time were throwing at the new industry or, Main Street investors, engaging with capital markets are no different than sometimes, the shade people like to throw at digital assets. Oh, they're uninformed. They don't know what they're doing. It's all speculation. So there's a lot to be learned from history that can be reapplied. And I think, can help us kind of make leapfrog progress for the future. So that's what kind of excites me, that we perhaps with DeFi and digital assets as a whole can create more catalyzing events that can, really enable more people, the ability to, create wealth and take charge of, as I said, their financial freedom and their financial health.
Absolutely. And I again, share a lot of this similar sentiment. One of the things that really excites me long-term about this space is to your exact point, not only democratization of access to, some of these emerging assets and the ability for people to start to build wealth, but also the kind of open and permissionless nature of a lot of these protocols, right? That a lot of, we'll call it, DeFi and the rest of the crypto and digital asset space are now being built upon. When you think about kind of the future of work, right? And I think this ties into what you're saying about people being able to have not only access to this, but also start to build up wealth and start to build up even those nest eggs from some people who otherwise may have been kind of cut off from the financial system for one reason or another. The ability in the future of what someone's day job, right, looks like, let's call it, maybe as soon as 3 to 5 years from now, could be drastically different than what it is today, because you have the ability to come in a, decentralized, permissionless community of sorts and, add tangible value to these things that are being built and get compensated accordingly for that. And there aren't as many barriers or hoops to jump through to be able to get access to those types of opportunities. Is that kind of what you're implying as well?
Absolutely. I think the diversity of use cases and the application of this technology, we're just getting started, right? And, one of the cool things about crypto at large, but specifically about DeFi, is this entire ecosystem is so multidisciplinary, right? When you start, kind of going down the rabbit hole, per se, of digital assets, you're learning about finance and economics and technology and political ideology and, et cetera, et cetera. So if you're somebody that's just insatiably curious and just driven by this notion of, lifelong learning, there's no better place to be. And I would say DeFi is that, but on steroids, right? As engaged as I am and obsessed as I am with digital assets, with DeFi, every day there's something new, a new project, a new protocol, talking to a new founder, and it's like mind blown, right? So it's very exciting. I think we're just getting started. You know, the ubiquity of use cases that we've seen thus far is going to explode even further. The cautious optimism side of me would say, you know, we also have to make sure that the ubiquity of those use cases is matched with the utility of those use cases. And really, you know, asking ourselves, why this use case? What is the problem we're trying to solve? And, you know, so that, you know, that we're generating true value for those constituents we want to reach and the big tent that we want to create that welcomes everybody. Because if we don't do that, then, you know, it can be seen as chasing shiny objects, right? So one of the things I anchor myself in is, you know, again, looking at it from the client eyes and asking myself, what problem is this solving for the client? What pain point is it taking away? Or what, you know, meaningful value is it rendering? And I think with that, you start to build up adoption and network effects.
Absolutely. And to that point, who is your core client, right? What is the general demographic of, you know, your target audience or who you're having conversations with on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, so the core clients that, you know, we are privileged to serve every day are individual investors and the RIA community. So, you know, from a demographics perspective, they kind of range the entire spectrum, you name it. And I think in recent months, you know, whether it's with traditional markets or with crypto markets, we've definitely seen a new wave of market participants, which is very exciting. And I think when it comes specifically to digital assets, you know, the range of clients that we see kind of span that spectrum of crypto savvy to crypto curious to even crypto skeptic. And that's totally okay. And you know, we want to make sure that we're meeting our clients where they want to start their journey and kind of, you know, work along their side, right? So I think that's important. And you know, while with crypto, we saw the initial demand start with our active traders, which makes a lot of sense because active traders are kind of do-it-yourselfers and they're comfortable with, you know, new technology and with sophisticated instruments and asset classes. So they were the first to lean in and really we saw the demand coming from them. But very quickly, we started to hear from our retail investors or the individual investors. And I would say more and more in 2020, the group that has been the most active in terms of their heightened awareness and interest with digital assets is the RIA community, which really excites me because people, you know, while we talk a lot about, you know, what is it going to take to bring institutions, and often that reference is to pension funds and hedge funds, and that's a very important category. I get excited when I hear RIAs leaning into it because people don't realize the trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars of wealth in the United States that's under the custody and management of the RIA community. And sorry about the acronym, RIA stands for Registered Advisors. So you know, and these are individuals that work with their clients and help them manage their money in a way that can help them attain their life goals. So reaching out to this community and seeing the interest coming from that community, I think is a huge win for digital assets as a whole.
Definitely. And I agree. I think a lot of people focus a lot of attention around, you know, the institutions, right? They're really big kind of pools of capital. But to your point, what goes, I think, largely misunderstood is just the amount of capital that's also sloshing around within the wealth management industry. And I personally think, to your point, that that's going to be kind of the next big wave or next big catalyst for the next leg up within, you know, digital assets and those new crypto investors that are coming from the kind of non-crypto initiated world. I certainly think that's going to be within the wealth management industry. And to your point about who your core clients are, you know, I think it would be safe to say that your core client has at least some investment acumen, right? Compared to just kind of your average person on the street. Obviously, if you have a brokerage account, the idea is that you have at least, you know, some type of investment acumen, whether that's, you know, in the early stages, the beginner level, or, you know, you're more advanced, you know, active traders, as you just mentioned. In general, though, it's safe to say that your kind of core audience, your client base, you know, at least has or comes with a basic investment mindset, correct?
Yes, that would be a safe bet. And I think to build on it, Kevin, you know, the other central, you know, thesis of building our digital assets practice, which really, frankly, I've borrowed from our traditional business, is a focus on education and advocacy. You know, throughout the history of TD Ameritrade, we've learned and we've measured this, and it's proven out again and again, is that an educated investor is a more empowered investor and thereby a more successful long-term investor, right? Because they're not being flighty or flaky about it. They're taking the time to learn. And, you know, they may start with, you know, managed products or ETFs, but as they learn more, they tend to graduate and, you know, add diversification to this portfolio or, you know, start to engage with different asset classes. And, you know, and we believe education when it comes to digital assets is even more paramount, just given the nascency of the space, but also the perceived complexity of the space. So education is an area that we've spent a lot of time, talent, and capital in building up a rich repository so that whether you, as you, our client, you know, is crypto savvy, curious, or skeptic, that, you know, we're starting with credible content that is helping you build up your acumen. And as I tell people, it's totally kosher to be skeptical. I want you to ask hard questions. I want you to struggle with it. You know, there's aspects of crypto that can just seem so quixotic and you're leaning into windmills and you have to kind of suspend belief for a little bit. And that's okay. But, you know, being apathetic is no longer an option, right? You have to educate yourself and then you have to make the decision that's best for you given your current circumstances. So, you know, for us, education is critical. And the other layer of education that I would just add, you know, there's definitely been a Cambrian explosion of content. I remember learning about this esoteric thing called Bitcoin in early 2012, and there weren't a lot of resources. There definitely was in Delphi Digital. I wish there was. And we've come a long way in the space. But one of the things I still hear from my clients is, oh my God, all the jargon, right? All this technical speak. So I think we still have work to do as a community to make sure that the content that we're putting out is making this ecosystem more inviting versus intimidating. So with the content that we work on and the education that, you know, we're building, it's really focused on rendering, you know, the taxonomy of digital assets in a way that's in kitchen English, right? And making it analogous to what our clients already know and understand today. Because if you make something analogous to what people have already accepted, then their adoption of this quote unquote new thing is going to be, you know, frictionless, right? But if you storytell your way as, oh, this is so different, this is so special, well, guess what? No one's going to want to lean into it. Like, they're going to be intimidated and they're going to walk in the opposite direction back to something they know and understand. So I think those aspects of storytelling, making it analogous and delivering it in kitchen English are, you know, some important aspects as we keep building up the education for digital assets.
I think that's a really, really good way to put it. And sticking with that point, when we think about education obviously being absolutely paramount, if we really want, again, not only just mass adoption and the growth of, you know, the digital asset space, but also to bring in, you know, a much larger cohort of people to have access to these potential opportunities you and I have been talking about. Is there anything or any concept in particular that you find your clients struggle with more than others? And I'll blanket that with, it could be, you know, when we talk about jargon, it could be just the idea of decentralization, you know, what some of these protocols are trying to do. Is it more on the technology side where they just don't understand how blockchain and distributed ledger technology operates? Is it, you know, more on the kind of digital asset or token economic side where they're trying to figure out how these things can accrue value? I think it'd be really interesting to hear, you know, what some of your core clients, what some of the, you know, kind of bigger marquee struggles that they're going through or having a difficulty wrapping their heads around. Because again, you know, for us and for obviously our audience out there, I think it also gives us all a direction in which we can try and help push that education, because oftentimes, you know, again, us both being in this space and kind of living and breathing it, it is very easy for us to go on tangents or, you know, hop on calls and use this jargon because it is very commonplace for us. So I think it'd be really helpful to understand, you know, which parts of this space, if there are any in particular, are the most kind of challenging areas for people to really kind of understand or wrap their heads around.
Yeah, you know, so I mean, now it differs from segment to segment. And, you know, obviously, you know, you want to meet your clients depending on where they're kind of, you know, coming at it, right? You know, we have a lot of our clients who have figured out digital assets are already trading it. And, you know, they are looking more for a variety of new on-ramps and instruments, right? Whereas for others, I would say in the quote unquote crypto curious category, you know, they're just starting to learn. So what we want to do is build that, you know, incremental graduated stream of content, right? So, you know, you finish one leg and, you know, almost like, you know, kind of creating a feedback loop and, you know, that dopamine effect that helps them, you know, encourages them to learn more about it and kind of go into the rabbit hole, you know. And for the skeptic, often, you know, the conversations are more fact versus FUD, right? You know, believe it or not, you know, there's still people who are like, well, you know, but Bitcoin's not regulated. I'm like, well, for something that's not regulated, I sure spend a lot of quality time with my BFFs from, you know, legal, risk, regulatory affairs, privacy, et cetera. Or, you know, oh, well, Bitcoin is too volatile. And our retort to that is, well, we've done a lot of analysis to show that, you know, Bitcoin actually is not any more volatile than a lot of the FANG stocks. And a FANG is a category that our clients know, trade, invest in. So again, creating that analogous to, you already know this, right? You're just being harder on yourself and you can understand this. So I think different people come at it from different points. But the one thing I would say is, you know, that I hear often from our clients is they are really starting to come into this asset class. And I would say it probably is emblematic of the new wave of market participants that we're seeing. You know, they're coming at it more for pragmatic reasons, right? And, you know, they're looking at this asset class from the lens of diversification, you know, uncorrelated returns, you know, the narrative of digital gold, right? They may or may not know or care about the ideology, but it's less important to them, right? They may or may not care about all the technical elements, but it's less important to them, right? They're really looking at it more from a pragmatic lens. And I think that's important to understand because we have to switch the way we engage with them than maybe all of us who got in very early and were either pulled in because, you know, of the technology or the ethos of the ideology. And, you know, and those aspects might matter, you know, less to the new wave of market participants that are looking at it, you know, from the pragmatic lens. So that's why I go back to, it really starts with what is the voice of the client telling you and really looking at this technology and this asset class from the client's lens. Because at the end of the day, I'm not building these products and on-ramps for Sinena. I'm really building it, you know, for the new wave of market participants and help them access and embrace this asset class. You know, somebody used this analogy, which I love and I'm going to borrow is, you know, I know how to drive a car, but I don't really fully understand all the nuances of, you know, internal combustion. And I don't really care. As long as my car runs and gets me from point A to point B, I'm happy. So I think kind of using that analogy of, you know, our clients are like, help me understand how this helps with my goals of diversification, uncorrelated returns, a hedge against inflation. Sure, I want to kind of dig into the technology aspects and maybe the ideology and other things, but that's kind of maybe not where I want to spend my time. So that's how I might kind of look at it. And hopefully that's helpful to you as a content creator.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I'm often curious about, you know, to be frank, is how much of, you know, the growing interest we're seeing across both, you know, institutional investors. Now you've got obviously corporate treasuries that are starting to come in and allocate, you know, part of their cash positions to Bitcoin. Obviously, you know, your high net worths and even your retail investors in general, I would say, you know, across the investment landscape, there's definitely been a growth in interest in, you know, Bitcoin and digital assets. And it's actually accelerated really kind of in the aftermath of COVID-19 and everything that we've gone through. And I wonder how much of that growing interest is frankly dependent on price, right? In other words, you know, if we did see another, you know, real true downturn or crypto bear market where the market falls, you know, we've had a pretty sizable pullback. You know, we're recording this towards the end of right in late October. We've had a pretty sizable pullback from, you know, some of the kind of summer highs. But you know, if we had the market fall another 30, 40% and stay there for, you know, several months, do you think that that growing interest among, again, your core client base, do you think that interest is here to stay if there's kind of a step function change in the way in which people are viewing this space? Or is it, you know, heavily dependent on price and prices continuing to appreciate, especially if you do see kind of crypto break away from some of your more traditional asset classes?
I think price is an important catalyst. Of course, you know, we're talking about investors and traders. So price definitely plays, you know, an important role in the decision-making process. However, I would submit, Kevin, that again, when I look at it, you know, from the vantage point of the voice of our clients, the demand for digital assets, and to be honest, specifically Bitcoin, has been persistent and consistent, oftentimes agnostic of the price, right? Mm. I think the tailwinds kind of driving this momentum in, you know, on top of the price aspect that you referenced is really a confluence of a few factors. You know, one, you touched on, you know, the current macroeconomic conditions, right? It's really getting people to think about things differently, which is important. I think the second is there's a level of normalization that's happening with digital assets that it's kind of maybe shedding its, you know, rogue persona. And maybe some people in the crypto community might not want that, but, you know, it's becoming more mainstream, you know, when you hear Wall Street veterans like Paul Tudor Jones vocalizing their thesis, or you see brands that you know, like, you know, PayPal and others that you engage with starting to lean into it. And you referenced, you know, public companies adding Bitcoin to their balance sheet, or, you know, again, JPMC just put out a research paper, right? And this is a name that people know and recognize. So I think a lot of that is bringing normality, which is, again, helping people, you know, maybe folks who are on the sidelines, you know, they're finally jumping in saying, okay, you know, I have additional assurances to back my thesis, or I have, you know, the validation I was looking for. And then I think the last thing I would say that, you know, is equally important is we are starting to get more regulatory clarity, which is just so important when you start to, you know, look at the maturity and the legitimacy of any asset class, right? We saw that with the futures market, the Forex market, and it's no different. So where we are in the evolutionary phase, I think a confluence of those events are really helping, you know, to encourage people to embrace this asset class. One last thing I'll say specific to the RIA community, because we touched on it earlier. One of the things I'm hearing from our RIA community, and, you know, and because I've been asking them, you know, why this interest? And, you know, they give me all the reasons we went through. But another one from the RIA community that's really fascinating is, you know, they obviously have a keen eye on this massive generational transfer of wealth that is ensuing and will continue to happen and only get amplified in years to come, right? People don't realize there's trillions of dollars that will kind of move from one generation to the other. And the RIAs are very cognizant that the new client group that's inheriting this money, their expectations and preferences for investments and asset class is not going to be the same as their parents or their grandparents, right? And the RIAs are starting to get questions from their clients about Bitcoin and digital assets, who are probably, you know, learning about it from their kids. So, you know, we're starting to, you know, kind of build this really positive and productive flywheel effect. And, you know, and when I heard that from our RIAs, I kind of had an aha moment. I'm like, you're right. Like, you know, your parents might kind of not be into Bitcoin right now, but when the kids inherit the money, they may be like, no, I don't see gold as a hedge against inflation. I'm more in the camp of Bitcoin as a hedge against inflation. So the RIAs have to be ready for that. So that's another use case that I thought was fascinating.
It's funny, we obviously have a wide array of clients that we serve because, you know, a lot of what we publish tries to be obviously informative, but also there are some educational aspects to it. And, you know, we have seen, to your point, we've also seen a similar increase in demand for just, you know, knowledge and understanding around the space from that RIA community. And you know, what's funny is you know, 12, maybe 18 months ago, the conversations we were having were almost night and day from the conversations we're having now. I feel like 18 months ago, the conversation was much more about career risk if I put my clients into Bitcoin, or if I'm even starting to talk to my clients about Bitcoin or digital assets. You know, the risk obviously was there that things could go wrong. You know, Bitcoin certainly could take another leg down. The volatility obviously scared some people. And the career risk was, what if I invest in this and things go awry? And now it seems like that mindset is taking an entire 180. And now the conversation of career risk really stems from, okay, what happens if, you know, we don't put our clients in this, or we don't at least do our own due diligence and try to understand what is going on with Bitcoin and this entire digital asset movement? What if we don't, you know, put our clients into this emerging asset class and it does take off and it does do all of these things that people are continuing to tout that it can do? You know, where are we going to be left 5-10 years from now? And what is our, you know, rationale, or what are we going to be able to say? We're going to have a pretty good excuse, I guess you could say, for not, you know, kind of going with what's starting to become a bit more mainstream in terms of the mentality around, you know, Bitcoin and crypto. Is that something that you're also seeing?
Yes, I wish you could see me. I'm like, you know, grinning year to year. I literally had this conversation with an RIA client of ours this morning, you know, where, you know, and I've known him for years, and he's, you know, I would kind of put him in the crypto savvy category, but, you know, he always felt that, you know, he had to maybe mute his enthusiasm a little bit because of the notion of career risk, right? And also I would say brand risk to, you know, the RIA firm. And, you know, now the shift is exactly what you said, is what he said to me. Now the brand risk is, what if we don't offer it? You know, we are opening the doors to attrition. Right. And we all know, once the client starts to attrite, you know, for one asset class or, you know, one investment, you know, you're kind of opening the floodgate. Right. So there's that. But also, you know, kind of being thoughtful and purposeful about this and talking to your clients in an educated way and, you know, helping them integrate this into their portfolio is becoming a massive competitive differentiator. Right. Mm-hmm. So 100% agree. I think the career risk is starting to erode. Like, listen, I use myself, like, you know, I start to learn about, you know, Bitcoin in early 2012 when I worked in iBanking, and I used to joke, I couldn't really tell anybody at my day job that I was kind of, you know, falling into the Bitcoin rabbit hole, because they'd be like, you're doing what? Meanwhile, when I talked to my, you know, Bitcoin friends who were mostly, you know, cypherpunks and technologists, I couldn't really tell them I worked in iBanking, because they're like, you do what? You know, I felt like I had to mute myself. But now I'm so grateful that I get to build a practice dedicated towards digital assets and really democratizing access for digital assets. And I never thought that this would be my job one day. So I'm super grateful. But it also, again, illustrates the point that how quickly that transition has happened. So, you know, so I'm definitely hearing that from our RIA clients. The other thing, you know, I would also add to that is, you know, as bullish and enthusiastic as I am about digital assets and enabling access, when it comes to RIAs and even for retail clients, I'm also very empathetic that it's gotten way easier than when I bought my first Bitcoin, or maybe when you bought your first Bitcoin. It's jumped leaps and bounds, but we still have a lot of work to do, right? Especially in the category of UX and design, and kind of really, you know, minimizing that friction and complexity. But also for the RIAs, that, you know, there hasn't been kind of the playbook and the plumbing. So the analogy, again, I use as a pilot is, it's almost like you're flying the plane while fixing the plane, which is never a good idea. But now that operational risk is also eroding, because there is a playbook, you know, there is infrastructure and very strong foundational plumbing in place, so that, you know, they can kind of build on top of it. And also there's a diversity of on-ramps and instruments, which is helpful. You know, people forget that 4 years ago, when the last halving of Bitcoin happened, there was no such thing as a derivatives market. And today, you know, the derivatives market kind of dominate when it comes to volume and velocity of kind of Bitcoin specifically. So, you know, so adding additional on-ramps and instruments is a good thing. You know, we often get asked, you know, do you think ETF is a good choice or this? I'm like, the more choices, the better, right? Mm-hmm. Who am I to decide for Kevin that his engagement with Bitcoin should be through a managed product or spot or derivatives? My job is to unlock as many of those choices and provide education so that, you know, Kevin can make the best decision that's right for him, right? So I think the combination of taking away career risk, operational risk, but then also, you know, kind of adding the plumbing and the diversity of on-ramps and instruments is kind of helping to create that compounding effect of adoption.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, to that point, what are the biggest deterrents that are still holding, you know, the RIA community back, right? And I'll preface that with, yes, it's not as easy as we know. You know, let's say a client comes to, you know, their advisor and says, "Hey, I want to get exposure to Bitcoin." There's obviously a process in which that advisor has to go through. It's not as simple as saying, "Hey, yeah, sure, I'll drop you in." You just alluded to a lot of the different products that are coming out, and again, providing that choice and that regulated choice for RIAs to be able to give their clients exposure. But now the fact that we've got some of these products and choices that have started to evolve, we've got custody again. There's going to be iterations of this as we continue, and there's a lot of work we still need to do. I very much agree. But a lot of the kind of big pieces, at least let's say 12 to 18 months ago, that people said, here's what's actually holding back, you know, the institutional world and the RIA world from investing in this space. I think we've also come a long way from then. So what do you see as the biggest deterrent still holding some of these investors or these RIAs back from, you know, being comfortable putting their clients in these assets? And are there any tools or systems that you still think we need to be developing or building to accelerate that adoption?
Yeah, I think education is still critical. I don't think education is a once and done. I think it has to be, in perpetuity, and it's almost a continued effort, right? Mm-hmm. You know, one, because, you know, new market participants keep joining, but also two, this ecosystem keeps evolving, right? Again, you know, you and I spend majority of our time each day in crypto, and yet, you know, there's always something to learn, right? Now imagine somebody just coming into this and going, oh my, right? So I think the education aspect, and again, education that's rendered in a way that makes them feel more empowered and confident versus drowning them out in, like, you know, crazy jargon, right? So make it inviting versus intimidating. I think on the plumbing piece, we have come a long way. And, you know, kudos to all the wonderful founders and builders and operators, you know, and you know, the work that you guys are doing and really kind of helping us get to this point. But I think there's still, you know, so much more to do, right? Because again, think of it from, you know, look at it from the lens of the client, right? If you're an RIA or an individual investor and you have a finite amount of investable assets, right? And engaging with traditional capital markets is click, click, done, and you don't have to worry about the 50 things that have to happen in the background, right? But when it comes to investing in digital asset, one, it's not click, click, done, and there are 20 things that happen in the background that you have to be like, wait, did that happen? Wait, what about custody? Wait, what about, you know, market data? Wait, what about this? So, you know, we have to keep breaking down those barriers and those areas of complexity, because the people that are putting their money where their mouth is or their interest is are the ones that still are willing to kind of, you know, take on that Herculean task of spending time to learn about this or taking the time to, you know, check those extra boxes or do, you know, the work that maybe with traditional assets they wouldn't have to because it's either delegated or automated, right? So I think, you know, there's so many opportunities, which I think is a good signal for the digital asset ecosystem, right? You know, there is the famous Jim Barksdale quote that's very popular here in Silicon Valley, that there's only two ways to make money in business. One is bundling and the other is unbundling, right? And I share that because those constraints that people still feel they have in terms of, you know, repeatedly engaging with digital assets and making it as easy and frictionless as markets that they're accustomed to provides a fertile ground for investors and founders and operators, you know, to solve for those pain points. And we're already seeing that happen in our ecosystem, right? Either through people bundling their services or unbundling or, you know, all the all the activity that we're seeing in the ecosystem is very positive. And so I think, you know, we'll get there, you know, in terms of that. And the last thing I'll just share specifically RIAs is, and this is, again, credit goes to the RIAs who've educated me about this, is incentives matter, right? There's still a lot of question marks about an RIA that's investing their clients' assets into Bitcoin. You know, what is the compensation model for the RIAs? And that's an important thing, right? Because what is that Charlie Munger quote? You know, show me your incentives and I'll show you your outcomes, right? So you know, I think what does the incentive structure look like that makes it conducive for RIAs to spend the time? At the end of the day, we all have a finite amount of time, talent, and capital, you know, so how do we make it easy and productive and profitable for people to take some of that finite amount of time, talent, and capital and divert it towards digital assets versus things that they, you know, may already know and be comfortable with?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. And for this last question, I'm gonna put you on the spot a little bit here because we've talked a lot about education, right? And to be honest, the more we've talked and this discussion has gone on, I couldn't agree more. I think the educational aspect is something that, you know, honestly, even here at Delphi, sometimes, you know, we overlook because a lot of our clients are a bit more on the, we'll call them the more kind of sophisticated crypto spectrum. Is there a particular topic area or discussion point that we can, you know, as researchers and anybody else who's obviously out there listening to this, us as a crypto community, is there a particular topic area that you have in mind that you think deserves the most attention right now? Or I'll phrase it another way, we can do a better job of educating people on to bring them along and empower them along this journey so that they feel comfortable getting into crypto and digital assets. And it's not this really intimidating, you know, steep learning curve, which is very easy to see how somebody would think that. You know, what can we do from an education standpoint to help kind of bridge that gap for people?
Yeah, and it's very thoughtful of you to ask that. And, you know, as content creators, you guys have really done a lot. And I've shared this with you privately, and I'll share it now publicly, is, you know, your content kind of, you know, really lives up to the level of, you know, tone and maturity and credibility that makes it comfortable for folks like me to then, you know, kind of recommend it to, you know, constituents that we work with. So just kind of want to pass along the kudos. I think, you know, the feedback I hear, again, the voice of the client that I rely on and my own experience, and even working with regulators, which is an important component of education because it's education and advocacy, is, while, as I said, there's a Cambrian explosion of content, I can barely keep up with all the podcasts and the research material and the newsletters that come out of the crypto community, which is amazing. But a lot of the content is focused on the what, right? It's very oftentimes academic, or it's very, it's based in the, you know, what is this? What is that? It's very definition based. I think where we can take the content to the next level is, in addition to the what, integrating the how to, right? And what I mean by that, what I hear from our clients is, great, I get it. I'm in. I get that. You know, I buy into the Bitcoin as digital gold, hedge against inflation narrative, right? Now, the series of questions I have are the how-to question, right? Which is, how do I now take action, right? It's almost creating those mini playbooks. And this is something we hear from all our clients, but very much so from the RIA community, as mentioned below. You know, custody is a huge subject, right? And getting yourself educated on not just the aspects of custody, but then the how-to of choosing the custody model that's right for you, and then how to go about it, right? DeFi is another one. Like, I love the amazing use cases within DeFi, but my one, you know, critique of the DeFi ecosystem is, you know, the delta between the rhetoric of we're building DeFi to democratize finance and be more inclusive isn't matching the reality. Like, you and I are in crypto every day, and there's new concepts coming out of DeFi, like yield farming and the yams and, you know, all the new concepts that I'm going, wait, what now? So I think the barrier for entry is still too high for a lot of the market participants that we want to invite in. So I think the content that takes the what and turns it into the how is critical so people can actually, once they understand it, once they embrace it, then start, can then, you know, actually start to take action. So it's almost like, you know, putting out content and then that saying, here's three things now you can do with this, right? So I think that's an area of improvement from a content perspective that we can all embrace and do better.
I think that's the perfect answer and a perfect way to end this discussion, because I very much agree. Definitely need to lead people to water as well as teach them how to drink it in a weird kind of context. And full disclosure, I may or may not have sent Sunita $20 worth of Bitcoin before we sat down just to plug Delphi a couple of times. So I really appreciate you living up to your side of that bargain.
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate it. This is a fun conversation. It's always good to nerd out with fellow digital asset pros. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. So just tell people really quickly before you go, where can people find more about what you and the team at TD are doing when it comes to the digital asset space?
Yeah, in terms of the work that we're doing, you can find us at tdameritrade.com, and you know, from there it will kind of guide you to our resources related to digital assets. And you know, for your listeners, whether you're a decision maker or you're somebody who's trying to lobby a decision maker to help kickstart your digital asset journey or scale your digital asset journey, happy to stay connected and continue the conversation. One of the things I love about the crypto ecosystem is this mental model of pay it forward and how collaborative and helpful everybody is in this community. So if I can be helpful to anybody, you know, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn or on Telegram or Twitter. My handle is @Sunaina. The one good thing of having a strange name is you can get a one name, a Twitter handle. So, you know, happy to help and pay it forward.
That's fantastic. Well, Sunaina, thank you so much again for joining me. I really enjoyed our conversation. I hope we get to do it again soon.
Ditto, anytime. Thank you.
Hey everyone. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on iTunes, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter and LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our next episode out soon.